Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Solutions for the Underaffiliated, the show for people who want positivity, hope, and examples of improving the overall health of humanity. I'm Eric, and my co-host Habanero is here. Good morning. To make the start of your Thursday extra special, check all of our podcasts of this show and blog at underaffiliated.com and stream Asheville FM from both the site and the app. We're going to be talking with Ben Carey and Judith Klein from Mental Health GPS, which helps people connect with mental health resources in non-crisis situations in real time with peer counselors. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about Mental Health GPS and about yourselves?
The Mental Health GPS is a virtual navigation service. We have a toll-free number that people can call Monday to Friday between 12 and 8. They call us in non-crisis situations to get some kind of support. It could be a clinician, it could be a support group, it could be peer support. It depends what the situation is, and basically we help guide them in the right direction. We have a number of databases that we use for referrals. Those resources are pretty much vetted by us, and then we invite people to call us back if those resources didn't work out.
So when you say databases, what's in the databases?
We have our own proprietary database, which contains a large number of diverse supports and services that people can access.
Where'd you come up with this idea?
I'll talk about this a little bit. this has been... I have a background in journalism. I wrote for the New York Times for many years about mental health. Before that, the LA Times. And I was always getting requests and queries from readers, sometimes from colleagues, who were in the middle of a mental health issue. It was a kid or a relative or a friend. And they would ask me, what do I do? You know, what I have no idea how to go about this. I mean, my kid is suicidal. I need to talk to somebody. And over the years, I learned that this is just an enormous problem. When something goes sideways with mental health or substance use, it just upends families. They have no idea who to call. Some of them have a friend, for example, who's a psychiatrist. They just make calls to friends or they search Google and make themselves even crazier because it's very difficult to locate appropriate services. Many people don't even know what the problem is. They just need to talk to somebody first. So we set this up knowing that there's a tremendous need for this exact kind of service. If you were in the middle of something like this, you would love to have a friend, a knowledgeable friend, who also had access to an enormous database of services and could guide you through this journey. It's always a journey. It's never a one-step thing. That would be the person everyone would call first. And that's what the Mental Health GPS is. Call us. We talk to you. We find you some options for what's happening.
So some folks out there might be going, well, isn't there a suicide crisis line? I don't want people to be confused about that.
Well, yeah, I'll let Judy talk about that. Yeah,
yeah, there is the new 988 line that's just been heavily funded by the federal government, which is a wonderful thing. But that's a crisis hotline. That's when people are in immediate danger of hurting themselves or someone else. And we are a non-crisis. So when people call us and they are in crisis, we tell them to hang up and call 988 or 911, depending on the situation. But we're a line for when someone really feels like they're ready to reach out for help, they call us and we guide them. So it's different than a crisis hotline.
Right. So could you give an example of that?
So people call with a huge range of issues, relationship stress, work stress. A lot of young people call with anxiety and depression issues that they have not been treated for ever, and they're not sure what's really wrong, but they know something is. And I think the beauty of our service is that we're confidential, we're nonprofit, we're free, we're available for anyone. It doesn't matter whether you have insurance or you don't have insurance, or you're on Medicaid. We serve everybody who calls.
Okay, that leads to how do they get a hold of you?
So they Google us basically.
Okay.
We have. We work with Google algorithms, and
okay.
So we have a whole series of keywords that we have And when people Google those keywords,
well, what are, let's go through some examples and maybe even a phone number.
Yeah, if they'll Google depression support, anxiety support, substance abuse, alcoholism,
domestic violence.
Yeah, mental health support, substance use support, hotline. There's a whole range of those keywords. I should point out, Eric, that the so-called crisis lines, close to 90% of the calls they get are non-crisis, okay? Their people have some urgency. And this is the way life is, right? I mean, it's rare that the person's about ready to jump off the roof. That's a crisis, okay? Usually, it's something like, oh my God, my kid is acting really strangely, you know? Or, you know, I've been scared at work and I'm getting more and more anxious and I don't want to tell my parents or my bosses. A person comes to a point, but they want to talk to somebody. They call us usually right at the moment that they're ready to ask for help. And that's just a different group than people who really need to call 911 or 988.
What's that phone number?
Since we answer it and we don't call it.
Nice. Nice.
No, it's 888-672-0365.
Okay, keep that handy because we're going to ask you for it again. A lot of times parents wake up or people wake up and they're not feeling great. And they feel like it's urgent. I need to go to a doctor. And they call the doctor. And then they sometimes get an appointment that day. Is this situation analogous to that?
Most GP visits, I don't know if this has changed, but certainly the data was, you know, in the last decade, are for mental problems. That is, the person is feeling like they need to see someone. They're feeling sick. They feel they have a problem. And it turns out in the end it's a psychological issue. And so a lot of health systems have tried to respond to this by essentially setting up health teams. That is, you know, you have a psychologist or social worker is working with the GP so that they can kind of solve and reduce this burden on the system. Our callers are different in the sense that they don't necessarily want to go to a GP. They don't know what the problem is. And they're in a state where, you know, they've gotten to a point where I need to call someone. I just don't know who that is. They might not have a GP.
A lot of people don't.
Yeah. And GP, you mean general practitioner.
General doctor, an MD. Yeah. So mental health's different from, you know, from physical health. I mean, it's easy to go in and say, well, I have a bum knee or I'm feeling I have too many headaches or something like that. But talking about a mental health issue is much harder for people to do.
If someone is in a panic or worried or not knowing what to do, it seems like the first thing that happens is when someone answers the phone on the other end and is willing and able to listen to you, it just changes your whole level set right off the bat because you're like, oh my gosh, maybe I am not crazy. Maybe this really is something and maybe somebody can help me.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, that we do have live people who answer the phone, who actually pick up the phone, because that's a modern-day problem, that no matter who you call now, it's like this call is being monitored and recorded for, you know, quality assurance, and we don't do that. And so when people call, we tell them that this is confidential. I often tell them how proud I am of them, actually, for reaching out for help because it's such a hard thing to do and they had the courage to do it.
So you're answering some of these calls yourself?
Yes. Yeah. Ben and I have both answered many calls ourselves.
So could you give an example?
Sure. There's a range of urgency here. For example, we have gotten several calls from mothers of sons. The sons are grown sons living with them who have a significant mental health problem, usually psychosis, and often drug use with that. And the son is becoming more and more threatening to the point where the mother or the parents are now afraid of the son and they don't know what to do. They're locking their doors at night and so on. So the question is, what do you do there? Right. That's a very difficult one for anybody. What they want usually in those cases is mobile crisis team, ideally without the police, because the police can inflame the situation. They're there for obviously for a reason, for safety. But often these kids have already had run-ins with the police. So that would be a sort of on the high end of urgency example of a call. And we then find them mobile crisis connections so that they can make this happen. And we can also connect them with other parents who've been in the same situation and ideally with therapists or for the longer term for the kid. The tricky part is the person has to be willing. That is the person with the mental health problem. Okay, so that's on the higher end.
What areas do you serve?
Our search engine is basically targeted geographically toward North Carolina, and we are getting calls from all over the state.
What are some of the key differentiators or factors? And I'll just prompt you a little bit. You mentioned anonymity. What other things would you say make you kind of unique?
Well, I think, the confidentiality, UNC, for example, has very good mental health services for their students and their staff. But if you're a student there, one could understand why you might not want to call, something within UNC. Well, who's going to find out, my professors, my parents? And so I think that's a big part of it, that they know that no one's going to find out that they called and they're safe. I think they feel safe for that reason. And that's in spite of all the confidentiality policies and HIPAA and all that stuff that, the universities probably would keep it confidential, but the students are scared. And I understand that. I think I would be scared to call as well. And it does take a lot of courage to pick up that phone and stay on it till someone picks up when you're in trouble.
So who am I talking to if I call?
So you're talking on our line. We have peers, which are people with their own lived experience who are trained in active listening and all those skills that people need to speak to people in distress. And then they're backed with these databases. So they're people who have been there themselves. And I think that gives a huge amount of credibility.
Do you have a quick snapshot of any demographic information about the folks who typically call?
Yeah, we can certainly give you that. We gather anonymized data on the callers if they consent. I want to mention a couple of things following up on what you asked, Judy. We are independent, so we're not funded by any health system or insurer or anything like that. We're not sort of trying to get people into a certain system. We are not ideological, which, as you may know, in psychiatry is very political. And, there's a group that thinks that, psychiatry is bad, and there's another group that thinks that psychiatry is the only answer, and I'm simplifying this, but we don't have any ideology. We refer or connect people to what appears to be needed and let them make the choice. They have options. We don't rule anything out in that way. If the person apparently needs a psychiatrist, we give them that option. If they need peer counseling, that is what Judy just mentioned, peers are people with lived experience who have been on the inside of these systems, then we give them that option too. So that's another thing I think that I want to just add. In terms of the callers, we have over 1,000 intake records now. Again, those are anonymous. We have most callers are 30 years old or younger. Most calls have to do with anxiety, depression. Okay, that's to be expected because those are the most common mood problems. And often those are to do with family or work situations or relationship situations. 35% of our callers are Black, which is higher than the percentage, which is 20 in North Carolina. We don't know why that is so high. About half, just over half of the callers have private insurance. So Blue Cross, Aetna, whatever it is.
Is that an issue?
Insurance, whether someone has insurance or not, and what kind of insurance they have, drives everything. Often in this state, people who have Medicaid are better off in terms of the range of services that they might have access to than someone who has Blue Cross or any other. It's not necessarily that they get better services or that those services are of higher quality. They might be, but they do have access to more in general, in our experience. In the database, there is the information for each program about what insurance they take or not, or whether it's free to everybody, regardless of insurance.
Why do you feel like this doesn't exist anywhere else?
It's sort of scattered, just like the system is. And so that, for example, NAMI, which is the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, has chapters all over the country. Some of them do this well. They are able to connect people to resources pretty well. Others chapters don't do it so well. It's hit or miss. There are directories out there. I think there's a hope, especially among, you know, in the government side, that if you just provide a directory, then people will find their way through it. SAMHSA, that's the acronym. They have a huge directory, and you can search that online. We haven't found a good example of where you have a live person with personal experience who's been trained, who also has access to an updated database of services, who can ask you, what's your insurance? Oh, you don't have any insurance. Where are you located? How old are you? What's the issue? And can very quickly come up with several options that would be available to you. There may be services out there like that. We just don't know where they are. And I should also add, we keep data on all of this stuff. Again, it's anonymous data. And traditionally, the old models, they don't track that data. They do answer the calls and they try to help people. But there's no data side to that. We believe that, especially in today's, you know, today's world, it's all about data. You have to have some handle on who's calling and why, so you know you can direct your resources there. And so we think that this is the future in mental health. It has to be there. It has to be a public utility at some point.
We're also independent and not connected to any program, so you're not calling a health system where what they can do is refer to what's in their system. We are completely independent, and since the pandemic, I think one of the only good things that came out of that was the expansion, the huge expansion of telehealth. And telehealth has made resources available to people in, you know, rural areas where there are service deserts, as we call them, where there's really nothing, given people access to support, therapy, to all different kinds of services that they wouldn't have had otherwise.
So real quick, why don't you give folks the number to call one more time?
So the number is 888-672-0365, and it's from 12 to 8, Monday to Friday.
You mentioned at the start of the show that you use search engine optimization. What are some of the key search terms that people should think about using?
Anxiety, depression, hotline.
Mental health support. Substance hotline is usually one of the words that picks us up, because that's kind of a word that just jumps into people's head.
Crisis is another word, which, you know, again, Ben was saying before that people, I think the term crisis is widely misunderstood, because we think of crisis as someone's really in imminent danger of hurting themselves or someone else.
Everyone's crisis comes at a different time. Is it a crisis for you? When is the situation becoming intolerable for you? Whether or not you're about to hurt somebody, if things are getting bad. They're getting bad, and suddenly you're like, I'm falling apart here. I need to talk to somebody.
I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I don't have no idea what to do. It's not that you're about to hurt someone or yourself, but you feel your life is unraveling, and that is a kind of personal crisis. There's a kind of terror that comes with that. That is not technically, oh, I'm about to shoot myself. It's different. But that's when people, you know, we've all been there, right? It's like something is just terribly wrong. I need help. And it's not a physical crisis. It's just a terrible urgency. It's a personal need for support that has gotten so great that you actually call somebody and you're willing to call a stranger. And it takes some, you know, guts to even make that move.
Do you feel like over the last 10 years, 5 years, that demand has been growing, that more and more of us are in this situation where we need to, where we want to talk to someone, even a stranger?
I think so. Yeah. I think during the past few years, COVID has really affected people. Young people have been especially affected and isolated. Their lives have been completely disrupted. And I think that's certainly part of it. But I also think the lack of community and the disconnect in American society, is a driver of a lot of angst. So I do think that, I mean, we have demonstrated, we've done a one-year pilot of this GPS service in North Carolina, and what we've demonstrated is that there's a clear need and a niche for this.
So some would say, well, why don't people just call a counselor? You have a database of folks, but why don't I just Google psychologist or some other kind of therapist and just call that number instead?
Well, you know, Google throws out a lot of garbage. So what you're going to get if you do that is you're going to end up with a bunch of ads, first of all. And people just get so confused. A lot of times they really don't know who to call or what to do or what the problem even is. So we help them kind of sort through those issues.
I even know, because I know people who have been in that situation saying, you know, I really need to talk to somebody. Well, do they answer their phone? Are they accepting new patients? Do they take your insurance? So how many people do you call before you get completely frustrated and defeated, especially, Ben, as you said, when you reach that point where you're ready to reach out and get some help, you're already maybe a little bit at the end of your rope.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So the first thing that I think about is when somebody calls you at GPS, that they've got someone who's going to calm them down and be able to listen to them and give them some useful information. Is that the feedback that you get from people? That do people call you back?
Some people call us back. A lot of people text us saying, thank you so much. People tell us on the first call that, thank you, you've made me able to think about this in a rational way and able to move forward. I think compassionate listening is something that's really missing in our society. You know, people don't listen and people don't pick up the phone.
I think those are all differentiators. Another thing you mentioned was texting.
Yes.
How does that work?
So people can either call us or text us.
Okay.
And when we get a call, we ask people, how would you prefer to receive information from us? Is it by, do you want me to call you back? Or do you want me to text you or email you? And usually they'll say, yeah, text me. That's great. And so we have their number and we just text them, you know, with resources.
So it sounds like there's a significant amount of high touch conversation, dialogue, sharing of information, and those are all the things it seems like would calm someone down.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to go back to what you were mentioned before, Eric, like, why wouldn't you go on Google? I mean, it's just shooting in the dark. It's totally random. Even if you found a counselor, you know, around the corner, all these counselors have different specialties. Do they know how to handle substance use? Are they, you know, competent to deal with family situations? Are they taking new patients? Do they take insurance? I mean, you can spend months, years finding the right person, the right connection. So just looking online is just, you're throwing a dart without a dartboard. You have no idea who's on the other end of this. So that's where we come in, is to provide some options that are suited based on what your situation is. So sorry, I went back to what you said before. You asked another question. Yes, it calms people down. You call me and you're upset. You don't know what to do. You're not sure what's going on. What's the problem? You're feeling terrible. Your kid's gone sideways. I will listen to you calmly. I will relate to you. I will assure you that I can connect you to accessible resources. I will even connect you, if you want, to someone who's been there through the same stuff that you have or that you're going through now. Just that knowing that this information is available and that you can call back, some people calm down right away. They say, you know what, just knowing you can do that, I think I'm going to be okay for now. I will call you back if it gets worse.
Some could be listening to this and going, look, shouldn't people just, you said yourself, people calm down. People calm down. So just calm down. Get through this. Tough it up. Quit being such a snowflake. How would you respond? Is this new? Is what you're talking about something new? Or are we, as a society, trying to look for solutions to made-up problems?
Well, I think the problems are real. And I think people really do need connection. And that's why they're calling. I mean, they need somebody who is an empathetic and knowledgeable ear on the other end.
So why do you think we're more upset now? you would think we're humans. We couldn't have evolved that much in the last 50 years where we were not upset and now we're suddenly burgeoning with anxiety and depression. What's driving this?
I think we're talking about it a lot more. I'm not sure that, you know, the rates of anxiety and depression are higher. It's that, you know, these things are out. You know, they're topics that are not taboo anymore as much as they were.
You used to have to suck it up whether you wanted to or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's still an enormous amount of stigma attached to mental health or substance use, and it's hard for people to come out and talk about that. But
do you get much substance abuse, or is it mostly anxiety and depression?
No, it's everything. And substance use is very often co-occurring with whatever the mental health issue might be. Very often,
you solve a sense of urgency. But is there something else that's creating the demand for you that is part of the problem?
Yeah, the mental health system, if you can call it that, which isn't a system. It's a fractured, broken mess is what it is. I think people have become disillusioned by it. They can't get the help they need.
There really is no centralized, trusted place that can guide you through the resources that are available. Each hospital system or university or institution that has some mental health services has a directory, and they even sometimes have very good people who answer the phone and help, but they're working for that place. And those places are all over. If you're not in the system, then they can't help you.
And if the help is not in that system, they're not going to tell you about it.
They're not going to tell you about it. And so we think that, as Judy said, the system is really not a system. It's 1,000 systems that don't talk to each other. We think that a centralized platform, whatever that is, trusted, centralized, and independent platform that has an ability to educate consumers as well as guide them is the best way to, at least bottom up, to begin to introduce some improvements and some really better standardization in mental health care. You can't really do it top down very well. It needs to come from educated consumers, a kind of a demand for trusted, centralized place to get information.
Describe when someone should call you.
There's a huge range of examples of that. We have a lot of moms who call worried about their adult children because either the person is denying that there's any problem. That's a very challenging kind of call because people often think that, well, there's an adult who clearly has a problem, but they're saying there's nothing wrong with me. There's something wrong with everybody else. And then the question is, well, how do I get them into treatment? And the answer is complicated because, you know, you don't want to end up in a situation where somebody is being involuntarily treated. Ideally, obviously, you want the least restrictive alternative, but that's a very big challenge. There are a lot of people out there who have mental health and or substance use problems and don't think they have a problem. So I'd say that's the most challenging case type of case we have. People should call us when they're in distress and they don't know what to do. They should just call us because we're not going to send them to a hospital necessarily. In fact, what we would aim to do is to provide them with the lowest barrier alternative or support.
Do you work with local other resources that have the professionals and you kind of have a network with them, or how does that work?
Absolutely, we do. Yeah, we work with local nonprofits. We refer to them. We work with Sunrise Community for Wellness, which is focused on substance use, but also mental health. And they have a whole network of peers that can help people.
As you work with folks, what are some of the things where you just shake your head and sit there and look at each other and go, if society only fixed this, or if only this was better, or I wish this was like that, what are you seeing that needs to be fixed?
What doesn't?
Yeah, it doesn't. Traditionally, mental health psychiatry has been one of the least funded throughout medicine. This is not all about money, but I can tell you that the lion's share of the money that's spent by the government and often private donors, too, who are interested in this area goes to brain research. It's the biology of the brain, the neurons, the genetics of the brain. This is a sort of desperate hope and search for some kind of biological cause theory to explain mental distress. They're not close. And that money helps people not at all. It's a waste of money if you're trying to help people in distress today. So, for example, some even private donations of, you know, $20, $30 million that go to institutions, a lot of the money is earmarked for brain research.
And it you know that from your journalism days.
From my journalism days and even after. You know, we talked to some of these institutions and people getting the grants and so on. So that's a waste of that money. That is doing nothing for people today. So you're looking at an area of medicine, mental health psychiatry, that's already sort of poorly funded and certainly on the low end in terms of insurance coverage. And all of the research money is going into basic brain biology. So it is a waste of that money in terms of helping people now. It's not helping anybody. And as I say, even some of the private donors do that. There's something sexy about the brain biology stuff, that it's attracting the money. And it's also, there's something more medical looking and scientific looking about it. And you say, well, I'm going to give this to, Mass General Brain Biology Department, which is researching the biology of suicide, which is an absurd statement. But they may be doing that, and they're smarter than I am, but that work helps nobody.
If you're not going to do the research, the other end of that is feet on the street, actual yes. people you can refer yes. to. Do we have enough of those folks?
No.
So what do we need?
So, Judy, you should talk about this. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we need much more compassion, for sure, and we need more services. We need community-based services that meet people where they are, and are low barrier.
Like what?
In terms of access, well, more lines like we provide the GPS, more peers. The peer workforce is one of the most important workforces in mental health, if not the most important, and it is severely underutilized. Peers are undervalued, they're underpaid, and they're underemployed. And that is so wrong, because there's no one with more credibility than someone who's been through it themselves. Because oftentimes it's not, you know, a clinician someone needs, it's just someone to talk to.
If I wanted to be a peer counselor, is there reimbursement available for that?
Yeah.
I think that's relatively new. Until relatively recently, maybe, 10, 15 years, mental health care was not reimbursed in general. Or if you had good insurance, maybe they'd give you 10 visits a year. So it didn't make it profitable or sexy or exciting or a wide open field for people to go into it. When the pandemic hit is when telehealth really came out. So I think one of the reasons there might be not enough people to do this is, in many ways, it's a relatively new reimbursed service in the scheme of things. So maybe encouraging people to get involved in that from a profession standpoint might be something that people who are listening could do too.
Yes.
If I was to call, would I necessarily get referred to a licensed professional where I would have to go through this insurance process? Or, like you were saying earlier in the program, I'm calm now. Thanks a lot. I talked to my peer counselor. I'm going to be fine, at least for a little bit. Thanks for the names you gave me. Do you have any inkling of the percentage of your folks who are done versus the ones who go in for clinical treatment?
Yeah, it's right around 10%, 10 to 15%, I think, of people who call up, they have the conversation, they're in some distress, that we have a conversation with them. We tell them that we can give them a range of options and, connect them. And after the conversation, they say, look, I think I'm good for now. I'll call back. I think it's about 10, just over 10%.
That's kind of a good thing, because I feel like a lot of times people don't want to deal with the healthcare system. They rather would get peace of mind from someone. It is like you were saying, it's almost like talking to someone you have complete trust and confidence in. And then you're like, thanks, like having coffee with a friend or something. You have this great conversation, and there's something to the fact that oftentimes people tell things to a stranger they would never tell the people who are closest to them.
Yes.
And it sounds a little bit like that kind of a scenario.
That's true.
And then you get that reassurance. Okay, well, you talked me off the ledge, but I know if I wind up there again, I could call you again and maybe I could use one of those services.
Absolutely. Yeah, we always welcome people to call us back. Even if we give them recommendations and those don't work out for whatever reason, we want to know that.
Yeah. Speaking of, could you give your number again?
It's 888-672-0365.
And I love talking to you guys about your algorithm. So again, if you could put together the three words that you would advise someone to put into Google, because that seems like a big opportunity for folks. Just, oh, I can just put in like 3 to 5 different words that would work.
Mental support hotline.
Mental support hotline.
Is, yeah. I mean, the algorithms pick up a variety of different keywords.
But even if they put in crisis, again, you know, I was saying before that crisis is a word that's very kind of loosely used. But so a lot of people do put in crisis, and we have that as one of our keywords because they understand, they feel like they're in a crisis, even though it's not literally the definition of, you know, a life or death.
And of course, it is Google. You're going to get 1,000 things, but we will be at the top of that. Not at the necessarily at the very top. It depends on the search, but we'll be near the top.
This started in North Carolina. Can you help people outside of North Carolina?
Absolutely. We've had some interest, actually, from a number of other states saying, we need the GPS here. Can you bring it? And, you know, the answer is, of course. We have the expertise to replicate this. This is a very easily scalable program. You have to have some things in place. There's a significant tech part to it, and there's a significant training part to it. So you really need to have the right people answering the phone, people who are non-judgmental and people who know how to listen to people who are in distress and know how to handle that. So we have to take care of our peers' mental health as well, because right, they're listening to a lot of
Are you looking for peers? Are you looking for more peers?
We will be looking for more peers. We've concluded our one-year pilot in North Carolina, and now we're looking for funding to strengthen our presence in North Carolina, and then, of course, to replicate this program in other states.
So if someone were to hear this, they could call you. I mean, you have the resources and the know-how. You know,
yes.
If they were in Utah or something, you could probably guide them. You could help them figure out what they need to do.
Yes, we have our database actually includes national resources as well, of course, not super well mapped because this country is enormous. But yes, yeah, we can help people in other states, and we do.
Well, Ben, Judy, we're going to have to go, but thank you very much. This has been really fantastic. What a great service. I think it's a fantastic resource for folks. So thanks for coming in today, and have a great day.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.